Yud Gimel Tammuz, Tuesday the 26th of June, Rabbi Shimon Heller, Ben Odom Lechaveiro.
Okay, good morning everybody. On Rosh Hashanah, we read the Haftorah that tells us the story of Hannah and the birth of a son Shmuel. Now, Lechaveiro, the reason why we read on Rosh Hashanah is because she was remembered on Rosh Hashanah and that's when she had the salvation and she has a child. But I believe that there's a much deeper lesson behind this story and why we choose it to read it, Dafka on Rosh Hashanah. So she didn't have children for many, many years. She's crying, she's davening, she's begging for Hashem. Until one year she comes up to Mishkan Shiloh, and that year she broke. She just broke down. She reached the lowest, not the lowest, the highest levels, the greatest Mima Amakim, the highest levels of Tefillah, as she davens that year. And I want to read you out that piece of Navi, the few psukim, what happened, and then understand what really went on here. The Pasuk tells us, Shmuel Aleph Aleph, Vehi Moras Nefesh, she was broken. Vatispalel Al Hashem. She came to the Mishkan, she was broken, Vatispalel al Hashem, and she davened on Hashem. Take note, the Pasuk says Vatispalel al Hashem. It does not say Vatispalel el Hashem. It doesn't say she davened to Hashem, it says she davened on Hashem. It's a difference between an ayin and an aleph. El Hashem would be with an aleph, this is written with an ayin. Chazal deduced from here that she used a very forceful system of tefillah, and she tried to force Hashem to give her her desire. She came to Hashem at Mishkan Shiloh. So many Yidden have been oiled a regal. And she turns to Hashem and she says, Hashem, I don't understand. For all these people you have neshamas, for all these people you have children, and one child you don't have to give me, not even one child. And when this tefillah will not bring her her desire, she'll take it a step further. And she will say, Hashem, is it possible that you created something for no reason? Do you, like, just create things because kabayachal, you've got, I don't want to say it, nothing better to do, and you create something with no reason or purpose? That cannot be. So Hashem, why did you create within me a womb and the ability to feed a child if you never gave me that child? And when that tefillah will also not bring her her desire, she will go one step further and she will say, Hashem, if you do not give me a child, I will force you to give me a child. If you, Hashem, do not give me a child the nice way, then I will force it through my own avenues. And she said, if you don't give me a child, Hashem, I will speak to a strange man in front of my husband. He will warn me not to do this. I will continue to do so. And then, after his warnings, I will lock myself in a room with that man. And as a result, my husband will accuse me of being a soita. He will force me to drink the mei soita. And what does it say in the Torah? If a woman will drink the mei soita, but she is really innocent, the Pasuk says, v'niksa, then Nizra or Zara, she will have children. Right. And therefore the Torah guarantees that if a woman is falsely accused of the soita, she will have children. So she said, Hashem, if you don't give me a child the nice way, I will force it through your Torah by doing a maisa soita, and of course being innocent, hence you will have to give me a child. Now while she's davening, she invented a new form of tefillah. As the Pasuk says, she's davening, and her lips are moving, but there's no sound. Her tefillah is going from her heart straight to Hashem. She is davening a new form of tefillah that we have now taken into our Shemoyin Esrus, from the heart to Hashem. Her lips are moving, but there is no sound. And as she's davening for Hashem, Ve'eli shomar al piyah. Eli is looking at her, and he can see her mouth, her lips moving, but he can't hear any sounds. So Eli's confused, because this is the first person to use this system of tefillah. Eli's confused, what is happening here? I can see her lips moving, I cannot hear any sound. Bachana was praying from the heart, without hearing sounds. But Eli misunderstood this. Eli thought she's drunk, she's crazy, what's she doing? Now the Vilna Gaon adds another detail to the story. And the Vilna Gaon tells us that Eli went to the Urim V'Tumim. And he said, what's going on here? This woman, I can see her lips moving, I can't hear any sounds. What is going on here? And the Urim V'Tumim lit up four letters. Chof, Shein, Reish, Hei. He read them as Shikoira, she's drunk, she's crazy. In reality, it's Kishera. It could be read as she's an innocent woman. Or Kisara, she's like Sara Imenu, she's davening for a child. But he read it as Shikoira. Hence, he felt she was doing something terrible, and he rebuked her. Eli said to her, Ad masay tishtakrun, till when are you going to be drunk? How can you come to the Mishkan drunk? How can you do this? Chana will fall to his feet. She will fall to the feet of Eli, and she will say, Lo yad Eli, no, my master, I am chalila, not drunk. Ishok shasruach anoichem, a broken woman, V'yayin v'sheh chaloish asisi, I never drank wine chalila or beer. V'eshbech nafshi lifnei Hashem, I'm pouring out my heart to Hashem. Al titen es amosecho lifnei bas belial. Do not give your maidservant before God as an evil woman. Please don't do this to me. Don't present me before God as an evil woman, because I'm not. Ki merov sichi v'kasi dibartat heino. I'm dubbing from a broken heart. Eli will hear this. Vayan Eli, and he will say to her, go in peace, and Hashem will give you your heart's desire. You have your salvation. Now, I have five questions on this piece of Navi. Five things I do not understand on these psukim. Question number one. They would call this, no offense, a balabatsha kasha. But it's a kasha, and it bothers me. And here's question number one. Eli is like studying Chana. He can see her lips are moving. He can't hear a sound, and he doesn't quite understand what's going on here. How does Eli come to be studying the way Chana is davening? How does he get to her? I imagine that in the Mishkan there was a humongous mechitza, at least as big as a mechitza which is by the Kosel. Does Eli stand on a ladder, check how all the women are? How does he get to her? What did Eli have in the first place to see it, to have a question on the way that Chana is davening? I'm not asking Mihilchus Tznius, I'm not bothered Mihilchus Tznius, Eli was a Kodesh, but I'm asking practically, how does he get to be questioning her in the first place? How does Eli get to Chana? Question number one. Question number two. He can't understand the way she's acting, she's davening, and she can't hear any sound, so he goes to ask the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim? Do you know what the Urim V'Tumim was? You do not ask the Urim V'Tumim a question unless it's something on a national level that will affect the entire nation. The Urim V'Tumim is the last place you go. For wars, for major events, you go to the Urim V'Tumim. David HaMelech, when he was running away from Shaul, went to Noivir HaKoinim, and he asked a question from the Urim V'Tumim, and the Koyanim asked his question and presented it to the Urim V'Tumim. Shaul went wild. He killed out the whole of Noivir HaKoinim because it's like endorsing that he's a king. To ask the Urim V'Tumim is only something national. And here, he's got every time a drunk woman rolls down the road, Eli goes running to the Urim V'Tumim. Question number three. He saw four letters, Shin, Chof, Resh, Hey. He seemingly misunderstood it as Shikira, really was Kishera or Kisara. Why did Eli make a mistake? Eli's not supposed to make a mistake. There's a system called the Urim V'Tumim. And if you can mix up the letters, then how does the system work? There's someone called the Kohen Gadol, who has got the Siyata Deshmaya to read the Urim V'Tumim correctly. Otherwise, what is its value? And Eli is the Tzadik Hador. He's a Shofet Hador. Why did he misread it? Eli shouldn't misread the Urim V'Tumim. Why would he have made such a mistake? It doesn't make sense. Question number four. So he misunderstood it, and he thought she's drunk. So he turns to Chana and says, how can you come drunk to the Mishkan? And he says, please, don't present me before Hashem as an evil woman. Al titen ois lifnei bas belial. Don't give me before Hashem as a bad woman. He's not giving her. He's not doing anything. He just made the mistake. I expect her to answer, ein amosecho bas belial. I am not an evil woman. Ein amosecho. Not al titen. He's not giving her. He's not deciding. He just misunderstood. Eli, you're wrong. Ein amosecho bas belial. What's al titen es amosecho lifnei bas belial? And my last question is, when he found out that she's really innocent, he said, you can go, you have your salvation. How did he know? For years she's been davening. How did he know that she has a salvation? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Dalet, tells us the following. It says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Dalet. Anshe Knesset HaGdoila wrote a list of all the kings that did so much damage to the Jewish people, but so much damage that they have no chelik in Olam Haba. And as they're writing the list, they write the first king on the list, which is Yeravam ben Nevat. Yeravam ben Nevat took 10 tribes, and from Yirei Hashem, from Oivdei Hashem, he turned them into idol worshippers till the very last king, Hoshea ben Ela, throughout this entire period, and they'll be scattered and sent away. This is all Yeravam ben Nevat who did this. The damage is so terrible, his name's written on the list. Say Anshe Knesset HaGdoila has no chelik in Olam Haba. King number two, Achav. Until Achav, they served Avodah Zarah, but they knew there was Hashem, it was like Beshittuv. Achav just instilled it in the hearts of the people. He put Avodah Zarah and into the people in the most incredible way. He is the second king who has no chelik in Olam Haba. Anshe Knesset HaGdoila pick up their pen to write down the third king, Menashe. Menashe broke all boundaries. He just went over, stepped across the red line. He took a pesel and put it in the Beis HaMikdash, where Hashem, in his Beis HaMikdash, he put a pesel. He did so much evil, he has no chelik in Olam Haba. And now, Anshe Knesset HaGdoila picked up their pen to write a fourth king who has no place in Olam Haba. And who is the fourth king? Shlomo HaMelech. What? Shlomo HaMelech was going to be the fourth king who has no place in Olam Haba. Look, imagine you have a little road between two schools, one for little children, one for special needs. You're allowed to drive down this road 18 kilometers an hour. Let's say 18 miles an hour. You're allowed to drive down this road. Imagine someone goes 19 miles an hour. What would we do to him? Fine, 19. 21 miles an hour. 30 miles an hour. If someone's caught driving down there 1,000 miles an hour, you put him in prison, you throw away the key. Hashem told the king he can marry 18 wives. Shlomo a little bit went above the quota. He married 1,000. And as a result, he did incredible damage. He mentored Hashem Shamayim, but he did incredible damage. Hazal tell us the night he married Bas Paroi, Malach Gabriel came, he put a reed into the sea. On that reed, sand would be mitzdaber, would come around this reed and become an island, and then it would attach itself to the mainland. This becomes Italy, Rome, Churban Bayis. And he married another woman called Malka Sheba, the Queen of Sheba. She left him and returned to her own country, but she had a baby girl from him. And that baby girl has a baby boy, and that baby boy is Nebuchadnezzar, which is the one who destroys our first Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech caused the destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash by going against the warnings of the Torah and marrying 1,000 wives. And that damage is so bad, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah wanted to write him as a fourth king who has no chelik in Olam Haba. And as they pick up the pen to write his name, suddenly, who appears in the Beis HaMikdash? David HaMelech. And he's standing there and he says, please don't write Shlomo on your list. Please don't write Shlomo. And they say, David, Bro Mezaka Ava in Abba Mezaka Bra. A child is Mezaka's father, father's not Mezaka's child. Nice to see you, David, but forget it, he's on the list. And they send David away. And they pick up the pen again to write Shlomo HaMelech, and suddenly a fire comes down from Shemayim. The whole Beis HaMikdash is on fire. The tables, the benches, it's burning! And they say, Leva Shemayim. Hashem, you can send the fire, but we've decided Shlomo HaMelech is on the list. We're not impressed. They pick up the pen in order to write Shlomo, and a buskel comes down from Shemayim and says, Chozir ish chmoir b'malachtoi. Shlomo was such a tzaddik, and he meant to so l'shem Shemayim, and he was such a oyved Hashem. And they say, so what? But we've decided this is the damage that he's done, Leiva Shemayim, and we're not impressed by the buskel of writing Shlomo. And they pick up the pen a fourth time to write Shlomo. And another buskel comes down from Shemayim and says, are you going to decide for me, says Hashem? And you're going to decide in my place. And Anshei Knesset HaGdolah says, you know what? Also David HaMelech, also fire, also one baskal, also another baskal. Okay, you know, we'll be Mavata. We're not going to put Shlomo on the list. Okay, they put down the pen. The list is left with three, and Shlomo is not on the list. Ask the Yavitz, brought down by Rav Eli Lopian. In Shemayim, they're like, spinning! What's going to happen? They want to put Shlomo on the list, and fires, and David, and baskal, and another baskal. It's all happening up there. Panic in the heavens. What's the big deal? And if Anshei Knesset HaGdolah write David HaMelech, they don't have the keys to Gan Eden again, and the keys are up there. If Shlomo will be written on the list, so what's going to happen? In Shemayim, they know the truth, they know his good intentions, they know he's a tzaddik, and they say, Shlomo, look, they misunderstood you down there on planet Earth, but we know you a tzaddik, we know your beautiful, holy intentions, here, come to Gan Eden. Up there, they'd make the decisions. Oh, we can make mistakes. Why were there such a panic in this world? And says the Yavetz, says Rav Eli Lopian, there are many times in this world actions that can be called a grey area. You could decide whether they're good or not good. They can be seen from two different dimensions. In such a scenario, in Shemayim they cannot judge innocent or guilty. It's in this world where they judge. And what they judge in this world is a psak, and Shemayim are forced to keep that psak. And if Anshei Knesset HaGdolah would have taken the grey area of Shlomo, who was mechaven l'shem Shemayim but nonetheless did damage, if they would have decided that he got no chelik in Olam Haba, in Shemayim their hands are tied, and they can cry and say, Shlomo, we love you, out of Gan Eden you can never come back. You have no chelik in Olam Haba. And all your svarim become sifrei minis, and Kehelis we put it into Geniza, and Shir Hashim has no place amongst us. The entire future of Shlomo HaMelech stands in the mouths of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. What they paskin is a psak, and Shemayim is forced to that psak. You know, we think to ourselves, if I speak Lashon Hara about somebody, I'm not really going to do that person damage, because Shemayim know the truth, so my opinion is not going to make any difference. That's not true. It could be that this person is in a grey area, and there's two ways to judge the person. And through my judgment, I'm an aid in Shemayim and can destroy this person eternally. And Shemayim are forced to accept this psak. Chana davened very, very bitter prayers to have a child. These are very, very holy prayers. They're coming from a broken heart. They are very, very powerful prayers. The tefillahs of Chana are so powerful, they're going to change the world. They actually brought Shmuel, who changes the world. Before Shmuel, there was hardly any Nevuah. Shmuel comes, the country is full of prophecy. Shmuel changes the world. And this is a result of Chana's tefillahs. They are very, very holy, deep tefillahs, l'shem shamayim. But there's a certain, let's call it chutzpah in those tefillahs. Vatispala Chana al Hashem. She is doubling on Hashem, and she's saying, Hashem, if you don't give me what I want, I will force you to give this to me. We can question, are you allowed to speak like that to Hashem? Are you allowed to bend Hashem's arm behind his back? Are you allowed to speak like that to Hashem? Chana is saying tefillahs that will change the world. And the tefillahs are crazy powerful, but it's a gray area. And we could judge Chana, whether these are beautiful tefillahs, or tefillahs that can be seen in a negative way. The holy tzaddik Godel Hador Eli is coming to the Mishkan. And as he comes to the Mishkan, in his eyes, his spiritual eyes, he can see hurricanes, whirlwinds around the Mishkan. He can see that something is happening that is so powerful it's going to change the world. And he's looking up to see what is happening. Is this positive or is it negative? Halonu ato olitzareinu. Is this something that will just build a nation? Are we standing in front of amazing salvations? Or is it a terrible kitruk? He wants to know. He's coming to the Mishkan. He can see something is happening in the spiritual world. The world is in tumult. It's upside down in Shemayim. And he's trying to understand what is this. And he cannot discern what he's seeing. He sees chemla, he sees chema, he sees beauty, he sees anger. He cannot understand, and that's because the tefillahs of Chana are mixed tefillahs. There's a positive and a negative side to these tefillahs. So Eli is coming to the Mishkan, and he sees whirlwinds going on in heaven, and he cannot discern what is happening here. Is it good or is it bad? Is it chemla or is it chema? So he's trying to understand what's going on here, and he looks to the source of these tefillahs. And the source is coming from the Ezras Noshim of the Mishkan. So he looks into the Ezras Noshim, whether it's physical, spiritual, it's irrelevant. And he sees that Chana is the source of these tefillahs. She is doing something that will change the world. But he cannot work out to the positive or the negative. And since it is so serious, he asks the Urim V'Tumim. The only thing is that the Urim V'Tumim cannot answer his question. Because in Shemayim, they don't know. Because they don't decide, we do. They can't decide Chana's tefillah. We decide. Hence, they cannot tell Eli if it's positive or negative. The only thing they can do is give Eli a word that can be read in two directions. And how he reads it, that becomes the psak. He is the God Lador, he decides. So they will give him Shein Chof Reish Hei. And they'll say, Eli, you decide. Whether this is Shikira, she's crazy, how dare she do this? Or whether this is Kishera, she's an innocent woman. And it's coming from a broken heart. And it is really a beautiful tefillah that is a positive tefillah. Because in Shemayim they can't decide, only Eli can decide. And Eli will read it to the negative, Shikaira. He will see it as negative. How dare she speak like that to Hashem? At that point, when Eli read it as Shikaira, he has destroyed Chana. We have no Shmuel, we have no Chana, she has no place in Navi. He has destroyed her entity. Because he looks at it in a negative way. How dare you daven to Hashem like this? The Gemara tells us, there was once no rain. There was no rain, the Jews are desperate, they went to Chani. Chani, we have no rain, what should we do? Chani davens, there's no rain. Chani says, I'll tell you exactly what to do. Everyone take the ovens, put it in the houses. He draws a circle on the floor. He stands in the circle and said, Hashem, I want rain. Because until there's rain, I will not step out of this circle. I'm staying here until there's rain. And there's rain. Shimon ben Shetach sent a message to Chani and said, I want you to know something. If you would not be Chani, I would have put you in Chayram. I don't care that you brought rain. How dare you talk to Hashem like that? You're telling Hashem that he must give you rain? If you would not be Chani, I would put you in Chayram, irrelevant to the salvation that you gave us. But because you're Chani, and you're so holy and connected to God, you can speak to Hashem like that. You are the sort of person, your connection with Hashem justifies to speak like that. Therefore, you're okay. But anybody else, I would never have allowed this. So Chana, we have to judge her. What she does can be seen very negative, but there's also a very positive side. Who is she and what right does she have to speak in what way to Hashem? Eli reads it as Shikoira, he has destroyed her. She has no future. The whole Klal Yisrael is not going to be able to benefit from Shmuel. When Chana realizes this, she falls at his feet. She realizes that he's wiping her off the map and she begs, Al titenis amosecha lifnei bas belial. Don't give your maidservant to the bas belial, because when you decide, that is a psak in Shemayim. You will give me, you will make me, or you will break me. Your word is my future. Al titen samosach lefnei bas belial. And she explains to him how she's innocent and how she tries to show that she's the equivalent of Shema of Chani Amagol. I'm doing it because I'm broken out of love to Hashem, not Cholila out of chutzpah. I'm a broken woman. Eli will understand this. And when he'll see where she's coming from, he will say, okay, you are indeed innocent. He will change his psak. It becomes kesheira and kesara. Now you can go home because you'll have your child. Because I know that you've broken the heavens. And the moment that I've decided to paskin positively, you have had your child. You have your salvation. It is incredible to understand that when we make a psak, we are making or breaking a person through our lashon tova, lashon hara. Incidentally, the pregnancy is the blueprint of the life of the child. When Shmuel will begin his life at the age of 2, he will paskin the halach in front of Eli, and Eli will want to execute him. He will want to kill him, and he will paskin, I'm killing this child. And Chana will come and beg and try and show him another dimension to Shmuel. He chalili wasn't paskin halacha, and Eli will change his mind, and he will not kill Shmuel. That's exactly what happened during the pregnancy. He at one point wanted to kill by saying, Shikoira, he has killed Shmuel. And then Chana will show him another dimension to what has happened to him. He will change his mind and he will read it as Kesheira, and then Shmuel is born. In the very same way that he physically would have killed him when he was born at the age of 2, he would have killed him through his mouth during this pregnancy if he would have seen it in negative light. You know, we say if I speak Lashon Hara, what damage will it do? We can make or break a person eternally. When Chazal said Lashon Hara kills 3, it literally kills them. And when a person speaks about a rabbim, about a tzibur, it's godol avoynoi minasoi. To the Chofetz Chaim. It is such an avera, because if I do a terrible chalila, if somebody does an avera, he's done an avera. If he does it 3 times, he's done 3 averas. But if someone speaks about a tzibur, he can do 10,000 averas with one word, because he can turn them into averas. Because his word can be the deciding factor about thousands of people and the way they have acted. There was once a very sweet Avreich family, husband and his wife, 10 children. Beautiful family, husband and wife and 10 children. They lived somewhere out of the area. And they had a neighbor. Goyish neighbor, a machshefa, living next door. An older woman. She lives next door, and she cannot bear the thought of 10 children. Impossible! 2 young parents should look after 10 children. Children look after children, all these pitgamim. It's not possible that they have 10 children. And she decides that they can look after 10 children. And she decides that they are abusing their children. During the day, the children would shriek with excitement. She would decide they're screaming from pain as the parents are beating them up. At night, the children would laugh. She decided that they're crying. And so time goes by, and she decides that these children are like impossible child abuse. So one day, she phones the social services, and she said, listen, I'm a neighbor of this large family, and you know, my heart loves children. I just love humanity. And I feel that I'm obliged to phone you up and tell you that there's terrible things are going on in this family. The children are being abused. They're being mistreated. The parents can't look after them. What's going on is just terrible. It's awful. This is what you're here for, social services. You've got to deal with this case. And social services take every phone call very seriously, and this one as well. They write down the details, and they decide they're making a bidikat peta, like a sudden visit. They're going to fall into this family suddenly and see what's going on in this house. So one evening, out of nowhere, they come crashing into the house. But that night, when they crashed into the house, was a Motzei Shabbos, Shabbos following 2 days Rosh Hashanah. And this house looked like what any house looks like on a Motzei Shabbos after 2 days Rosh Hashanah. The house is upside down. The toys across the floor, children and the toys and the children. The dining room, all the plates and dishes from Shalosh Shidus and all the dirty plates are all over the table, you name it. The floor is filthy. You come to the kitchen, you've got everything piled up till the ceiling for the 2 days Rosh Hashanah, nobody cleared up. It's all happening in this house. This house looks worse than anyone can imagine. And at that point, the father's got his son, one of his 10. This kid, et sidraita kop, he is on the father's lap, his head between his feet, his this all the way up, and the father's about to give him a azab patch. This kid deserved this from the first day of Rosh Hashanah. First day of Rosh Hashanah, his mother's trying to dove, and he's making funny faces, and he's driving his mother insane. She said, you know, all 9 of them can behave, and you can't. But she didn't want to hit him on Rosh Hashanah, and he's turning around her like a chicken, and he's driving absolutely crazy. And the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and Shabbos, and she warned him. And finally, he's getting the one patch, of which he deserves about 100 on this Motzei Shabbos. And the father has him on his knee, and he's about to give him a patch, and this kid knows how to scream. You think you're ripping the kid apart. You think the whole world's coming to an end. You can hear it down the end of the street. And at that moment, in walks social services. The house is terrible. The kid is screaming. The father's punching. That is it. This is serious. And so social services take this extremely seriously. And they arrest the parents. And in the meanwhile, Askanim get involved. And they manage to take the children and give them out in the meanwhile. But there's going to be a major court case next week, Sunday. And in this court case, they're going to decide. And if the parents of Khalid are found guilty, it is very, very serious. Parents could find themselves in prison for 20 years. Children can be given out to 10 orphanages across the country. It is very, very serious. And Nebuchadnezzar, the father and mother are shaking in their prison cells together. They're just shaking. They're nervous. The father overnight goes white, from black to white overnight. His wife, 20 kilos down in one day. And they're preparing for the big court case. And they have a lawyer, and the lawyer goes to check out what's going to happen, and he comes back to talk to them. And they say to the lawyer, tell us, which judge are we going to have judging us? Who's going to be judging the case? And he said, you're going to have Thomas. And they say, is that good or is that bad? And he said, it's both good and bad. There's a good side and a bad side to Thomas. The good side to Thomas is that he's a very honest, good person, in as much as he takes his job as a judge very seriously, and he really looks to find the truth. He's not got hatred, he's not coming with an outer agenda, he's not coming from a bad place. He really tries to get the truth. He takes his job very seriously. And therefore, if we can prove him innocent, and we have a chance of doing so, we have a chance of getting off the hook. The problem with Thomas is that he takes his job far too seriously. And when he makes a decision, he makes a decision. And if he'll decide you are guilty, he will have no problem to lock you up for 20 years. He will make a decision and he will stand by it. He takes his job very seriously, but when he makes a decision, it's a decision. And so the court case comes. And first you have the prosecution. And this old lady stands there and she tells this sob story of how I've been living next to this family for years and I just couldn't bear it any longer. The kids are screaming and crying in the pain and I watch the parents just beating them. And I just can't bear it any longer, so I called the social services. And you see they came crashing in the house and you see what they saw. The house was upside down. The parents are beating the children. This family is crazy. Listen, for the sake of these pure little children, we have to save them and liberate them from their parents. And then the mother gets to speak from the family. And she said, listen, you have to understand, I love my children and I'm the best mother I could ever be. Look at my children, they have no scars. You can see they're all healthy, they're all well, they're all brought up. You can see they have no scars. You have to understand that you crashed into my house exactly on Motzei Shabbos after 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, and therefore I couldn't clean out the house because I chonam Shabbos l'chol, and I couldn't do sponge because it's Shiloh Shechita, and I couldn't clean out the toilet because it's Boira, and she explained that. And I was like praying all these days for my children, so I couldn't do anything. And like, I was just doing this for the sake of my children. She's trying to explain the judges this, and you walked in at the worst moment. And this kid is getting one punch, believe me, it's nothing. He deserves a lot more than that. And she's trying to explain her side of the story. And the judge listened to both sides of the story. And he said, listen, never in my life have I had such a court case. Because I can see two sides, and they're both so powerful. But on the one hand, if they really have abused their children, it would be a crime to leave these children in their hands. On the other hand, if they didn't abuse their children, it would be a crime to take them away from their parents. I really feel, he says, the achrayus of this court case. But I'm a judge, and I have to make a decision. I'm going to deliberate for 10 minutes, and I'm going to tell you my decision. Their parents go out of the room, and they're waiting 10 minutes. They are shaking 10 minutes of eternity. And finally, they walk back in after 10 minutes, and the judge says, I've made my decision. I'm going to pull in one child from the family. I'm going to put the parents behind a curtain. They can see the child can't see them. I'm going to put them behind a curtain. They will see what's going on in the courtroom, but once again, those inside can't see them. I'm going to bring in one child from the family and get him to testify. And what the child says is my verdict. And the mother like breathes a sigh for it. Baruch Hashem. They bring my daughter, the Semgal, and she'll say how loving we are. Yatzanu me'afel al-oira, we've been saved. Or they bring my son, the yeshiva bacha. Which child are they bringing? Shmerel, the 8-year-old. That's the kid that was getting the punch. The mother said, not Shmerel. Any kid take the baby of two who's got more seichel than Shmerel. Just not Shmerel. Shmerel and only Shmerel. He's the one we've chosen. And the mother like, this kid knows how to say the wrong thing. He'll do anything for a bit of attention. Not this kid, Shmerel. The parents are pushed behind the curtain. And Shmerel walks in. And the whole court are looking at him. And he feels so proud of himself. He loves the attention. Everyone's looking at him. And he's trying to work out what do they want to hear from him to get even more attention. And he walks up on the stage. And he's all proud of himself as he stands before the judge. And the mother is looking at her son, Shmerel. And she's saying, listen, Shmerel, I want to tell you something. For all the tzoros you made me in my life. And that day when I came home from teaching and you locked me out of the house and you were inside making funny faces through the window for 2 hours and I'm standing shaking outside watching you. And for that time when you put the broom there and I went flying and I tripped off and my tooth was knocked out. And the other time, Shmerel, they did all your little narishkeiten. Shmerel, for all the things that you've done to me, I still love you. You're my child and I can overlook your iniquities. I can overlook your narishkeiten. I still love you, Shmerel. But Shmerel, you have to realize that you've reached a red line. Because if you cross this red line, I'll never forgive you. There is a red line. Shmerel, I'm your mother, and I love you for all the things that you did to me. But here is a red line. If you will speak against me in this court, Shmerel, you have killed your parents. You have killed me and your father because we will die of heartache. You have destroyed your 9 brothers and sisters because they all go to orphanages across the country. And Shmerel, you've destroyed yourself because you'll go to an orphanage as well and see how they'll treat you. Please understand that this is something that cannot be compromised. Shmerel, understand that. Shmerel stands there and the judge says, tell me, my child. Do your parents love you? And he's like, hard to know. And I says, Shmerel. And the judge says, Shmerel, did your father ever hit you? Oh, my father's got a big hand. Oh, can he hit me? And the judge said, okay, one last question. But this is the deciding question. When your father hits you, do you think he does it out of love or out of hatred? I want to explain you something. That when we're standing with our friends and we want to make a comment about a group of Jews, could be 10,000 Eden, hundreds of Eden, Hashem is standing behind the curtain and Hashem is cringing because our word becomes a verdict and Hashem is forced to that verdict. Hashem loves Klal Yisrael. He doesn't want to punish us. And yet we are destroying ourselves. Hashem looking behind the curtain and saying, listen, all averus I can overlook, but not Lashon Hara. I cannot overlook that you've destroyed my own children. Do you realize when we talk about a group of Eden and speak them down, we have destroyed them? We have destroyed ourselves because we're one nation. And we all need each other's schusim in order to be able to, live, to have a future, to have the schusim that we need. Someone once asked me, what was the end of that story? Just finishing right now. What was the end of the story? And I said, unfortunately, the end of the story is that he spoke badly about his parents and the family was destroyed. Why do I say that? The story is a mashal. But we had the Holocaust. And we say to Hashem, why did you make the Holocaust? And Hashem said, you're asking me why I made the Holocaust? You made the Holocaust and I'm asking you, why did you make that Holocaust? I never decided. I never paskened, you paskened. We read this after in Rosh Hashanah. Hashem said, you're coming to me to beg me to judge you in a favorable way. Judge yourselves favorably, and you have your own Yeshua. Let's go. Good. 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 Good.